Welcome, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us today. My name is Caroline Hall, and I'm the National Director of Aid to the Church in Need UK, and I'm here with my friend John.
Hi, I'm John Pontifex, Head of Press and Public Affairs for Aid to the Church in Need UK, and it's great to be with you today.
And John and I are planning to have a bit of a chat now and to share with you our observations and what we learned on a recent trip we took to Liberia. I was very excited to go to Liberia. It was my first time in Africa. Liberia is very important. It's a great example for Aid to the Church in Need because most of the projects that we run in Liberia are pastoral, and Liberia is in Africa, and that really accurately reflects where most of our support goes on pastoral projects in Africa. Liberia is a country it's in West Africa. It's along the coast, along the Pepper Coast. It has about 5 million people living there. It's mostly Christian. I think it's 85-86% Christian. The Catholic population is much smaller, about 350,000. I'm looking at John because John's the facts and figures man. And I'm the general impressions person, really. But we had a fantastic time. We toured around for about 2 weeks. There are three dioceses in Liberia: the Archdiocese of Monrovia, the Diocese of Gabunga, and the Diocese of Cape Palmas. So we were able to visit all of them and to visit our projects there, to meet the people, and just to sort of see what it was like in Liberia for a couple of weeks. And as I said, for me, it was my first time in Liberia, first time in Africa, as well as my first time in Liberia. And I just found the people so friendly, so hospitable. The welcome that we got. We were traveling with someone from Aid to the Church in Need International, and he gave us a quote. I don't know who said it. Said that God gave Europeans clocks, but he gave time to the Africans. And we were late for everything, but everyone was so friendly, and so they stood there for hours waiting for us, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they were always happy to see us. So it was just a fantastic experience. It's a very challenging country, very poor, very deprived, very underdeveloped. There's a lot of corruption. It's very, very difficult, and people are struggling, really struggling. And it's wonderful to see what the church is doing for them and how the people are reaching out to the church for support. So the Catholic Church there is really vibrant, really growing. And it's fantastic to be in a position to help support the growth and the development of the church in Africa and in Liberia specifically. So John's traveled many times to Africa. So what were your impressions? What was your feeling about it?
Well, you know, you look at Africa and you look at a continent that's had more than its fair share of suffering. We know that Africa, when people think of it, they do think of extreme poverty. But nothing quite prepared me for the level of poverty that we were to encounter in Liberia. And for me, you know, you can look at the statistics saying that, you know, it's one of the 10 poorest countries in Africa. And, you know, having been to places like Sudan and Eritrea, of course, we're used to that level of poverty as experienced in those countries. But what really struck me about Liberia was the way in which the people respond to this extraordinary level of deprivation with such an apparent joy. Mm. You really got the sense that the people, I mean, obviously they never get visitors. It's a country that rarely sees the light of day in terms of publicity. It's you know, people confuse Liberia. Are you talking about Libya? Are you talking about Iberia?
Siberia.
Or even Siberia. So they have so many difficulties with these two civil wars that's really knocked them back, and then Ebola. But when we went, we found this sense of real joy. Joy, and not only having visitors, but a sense in which the simple things in life can give so much hope. And the way the church seeking to respond to that, I think, was really encouraging. And obviously, from the Aid to the Church in Need perspective, the response of the church to this extraordinary level of poverty was something that we were really keen just to see. How are they responding as a church? And for me, what really stood out was when we went to Gabunga Diocese, and from there, from Gabunga, we went to Ganta town, and just outside of there, is a leprosarium where we encountered the Teresina sisters, and they were very keen to welcome us, and they then said, I'd like to take you and Caroline to see our leprosarium. And I've visited lepers in Cuba and in South Sudan, and I have to admit that those two experiences I found very searing, and they left a deeply ingrained sense of sadness in me, that this sort of level of suffering could still be around in the 21st century. You think of it in historic terms, leprosy, but the fact that it should be still present in the 21st century is just something that, for me, was I was just...
I remember you were worried.
I was concerned
because I thought that... Well, not concerned, but I thought the project... I looked at the project the night before, and it was to provide... that we had helped provide laundry facilities for the sisters. And I remember thinking... you know, that's not exciting me.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, why are we going to see these washing machines?
We
walked in with two different feelings about it, didn't we?
And we saw these washing machines and these, the church need provided these hand basins. And we have images of these hand basins and the sisters using them. And, you know, what's this got to do with it? And then when you saw the way in which it's critical to enable hygiene standards to be kept at the max when you're dealing with lepers on a day-to-day basis, you could see that this apparently really dull project that has not much to say for itself, when in context, it's a life-saving form of help. And then having seen these hand basins in action and how it's helping to keep everyone as clean as they can be, we duly went into the leprosarium, and seeing people in that situation, I found deeply... It just, you know, you just really feel in the 21st century, you just should not be witness to this. But then, as I say, the sense of joy was apparent, because we got speaking to one of the lepers. His name is John Flomo. And I was really finding it difficult to know what to say to this guy, because you're welling up just seeing him unable to use his limbs properly. He quickly told
his
me
hands,
he had no sensation in his arms, and he'd lost fingers.
Yeah.
And then I said to him, how long have you been here? And he said, I've been here since 1966, the year of the World Cup. And that he's well on to it into his 70s. And I just thought, gosh, he's spent his whole life in this situation. I said, asked him, well, how have you coped? And he quickly said, for me, it's the sisters, those Teresina sisters. They have been lifesavers. Because, of course, in that context, leprosy is really a social stigma. And he said his family had been, you know, unable to come and visit. They just felt this is something they just didn't want to do. The stigma, the fear of catching it themselves. So he said to me, my family are the sisters. They are my sisters, my mother, my family. They're everything to me. And he ended up by saying, you know, every day I say to God, thank you for the sisters. They mean everything to me. And I think, you know, you come to see the situation of great poverty and great difficulty, and to know that the simple thing of the kitchen facilities, the washing machines, and the hand basins were enabling this hospital, this leprosarium, to continue, and the impact it was having in that situation was just enormous.
I think also the respect and the gentleness that I sensed with the sisters, it was their lepers and long-term TB sufferers as well there, and in Liberia, like John said, people don't come till too late, they said, with leprosy very often, because it's such a stigma. And there's the idea that somehow you might be cursed and your family doesn't want to often spend time with you, and your village shuns you. And I noticed throughout Liberia, in different ways, the church is so gentle and respectful of the local religions, the traditions, particularly in remote areas, where the church comes, and they reach out to the children and the people who don't necessarily have the sort of familiarity with the church. They're learning, and I felt this. I don't have a word for it. Just the respect that we're coming to the people where they need us. They're not giving way on anything. You know, their Catholicism is good and it's strong, but they're catechizing in a gentle way. I think we saw that again and again, didn't we?
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, you come to a situation in Liberia where, you know, it is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's apparently, you could say, of Liberia, that its GDP is a third of what it was before the civil war, which began in 1989. And you've got this massive social deprivation, which has been made a great deal worse by a descent into drug addiction. This all these form of narcotics, drugs, and they have a special one called Kush,
yeah.
Which you take it and practically pass out. And you could see the effect, particularly among young men. They take this drug and they're sort of zoned out there. And, you know,
but I think it's important to think about that, because it's almost that you're so disenfranchised, you're so separate from what's going on, that you'd almost prefer to be in that state.
Yeah.
And that really struck me, particularly with the young men. You know, when you drive, the women always seem to be busy doing things, wandering around. And we would drive through villages or down streets and cities, and it would be the young men who were just sort of staring off. And it just struck me as so different from what I would expect to see here.
If you can imagine a situation where there's been so little by way of social and industrial infrastructure, and where the breakdown of society is such that many young people have grown up in a situation of no parenting, formal parenting in any way, no proper education. And so they have this feral class of people who basically live in the remains of the buildings that were still unrepaired from the time of the Civil War. And this is a sort of feral group of people, quite a significant sort of subclass of society, who are waiting to take whatever they can. And so petty crime and worse are endemic. And in a situation where at least 50% of the population is under the age of 19.
Below the poverty line.
And below the poverty line, similar percentage. You get the sense, how does the church deal with this? And, you know, be it with the sisters, be it with the priests, the catechists, they meet the people halfway. And we got a real sense of that, I think, particularly when we went to see the Holy Family Sisters.
I'm just going to take over here,
because I just want
to talk about my new friend, Sister Philomena Godfrey. What an amazing woman. And the Holy Family is the only local congregation in Liberia. I think there are 15 sisters, and we met most of them.
Yeah.
And they were just, every single one of them, amazing. And their vocation and their charism is to reach out to families, family life. And we went to have breakfast one morning in the Diocese of Cape Palmas. And there we're having, and the breakfast, as you know, I was born in the United States, and I have to say that their sort of pantry looked like my kitchen in 1975, had all the same sort of American browns of all sorts of things, mustard and all kinds of things. And so we were having our breakfast, maple syrup and everything, and Sister Philomena got talking about how they were helping the local society and how they were talking particularly about the women and the problems that the women have. They're married off often very early. They essentially are in a culture where their job is to have children and to keep the home, and it's not a very liberated culture for women. So Sister Philomena and the sisters put together a group so that the women could come and talk about the problems they have and get some help. And it was hilarious, because at one point Sister Philomena said that they very quickly realized they were going to have to speak to the men. So they then started a group for the men, and she said it was quite hard to get them to come. But once they started coming, I'm sure Sister Philomena let, you know, just explained exactly what the problems were and what needed to be fixed. And I set great store by her. But also, they were running a school, and the school has a boarding house. And John was very, very taken by all the work, that's the fantastic work being done there.
Yeah, so we having had this amazing conversation with Sister Philomena about how to engage both the men and the women in trying to challenge this culture, which really can amount to sexual violence in some situations, they quickly went on to talk about how they've been really at the doing their level best to help young girls who are at risk of sexual violence themselves. And so we were introduced to a good number of these young girls in the boarding house that the sisters, with Sister Philomena at the head of it, have set up. And they had these wonderful welcome songs and introductions, and we got to know all their names and what they were like and where they came from, what they hoped to do when they grew up, and how much they appreciated being in this very different environment. But there was one young girl in particular who I saw was very much hanging back. She didn't seem to want to join with the rest of the group. And I was intrigued to get to know her and to try and draw her out. So Sister Philomena, always up for a challenge, said, "Well, look, let me introduce you to this young girl." So her name was Susanna, and she's 12. And we stepped outside so she could feel she could speak more confidently without people listening in. And she started telling me about how she'd arrived in this particular place that the sisters are running, the centre for young girls, really having not even seen a loo being flushed. And she couldn't read or write. And there was a sense in which she had been quite traumatised by her early experiences in life. And so they had to start afresh with her and really enable her to begin to move on. And she, Susanna, then we have a little video clip of her describing very simply how much she appreciates being in the boarding house. And she said she herself, when she grows up, wants to be a sister. And I said, "Well, why would you want to do that?" And she said simply, "Well, these are the people who've shown me love. They've shown me care and compassion. Why would I not want to be like someone like Sister Philomena?" And you can see how this is how the church is grows, that you see this modelling, this best practice. And it's just so inspiring. And for us who support the sisters, be it with their housing, with their minibus, with their training, their novices, it was great affirmation to see just the impact that they were making in those situations. And, you know, Susanna is somebody I'll never forget. She had just such a wonderful way with her. And we share such bright hopes for the future now.
And I think the work in Liberia the church is doing for young people is very, very, very important. We noticed with all of the when we went out to all of the dioceses, they all have big youth formation programs, and they talk about the vocation, not just vocations into the priesthood or to become a sister, but also vocations towards family life, marriage, and they do everything that they can to help these children and young people avoid the pitfalls that I think into which many people fall in Liberia. Now, we're going to need to start wrapping things up. We've got lots more to share about Liberia, so I hope we have another chance to talk to you again soon. But we had a wonderful time. I can't wait to go back. And we've got all sorts of things to tell you about traveling around in Liberia. It's very interesting because the roads are terrible. And we had just wonderful experiences. It's a fantastic place. And it's a place that can really benefit from our prayers and our help and our support, because just as I've seen in the other places I've traveled to, everybody turns to the church for help. Thank you very much.
Thank you.